Hello everyone, it's Tuesday, October 16th, and welcome to the Liberty Advisor Podcast. Today in the podcast, what we're going to do is actually, I'm going to go over a client video that I made on October 2nd, 2018. It's important to keep that date in mind because that is actually the day before the stock market went down. And what I did is I made a video, about half an hour long, detailing the various reasons why I thought there was a perfect storm brewing for the interest rates to go up, which would ultimately pop a bubble in the stock market. And so this is information that is absolutely vital, especially if you're close to retirement, especially if you have lots of bonds in your retirement, or if you're trying to be on the sidelines and play it safe. We've got different ways at Innovative Advisory Group where we can help protect people from what's going on, whether the market ends up, you know, whether the Fed, you know, they could start printing money again and all of a sudden the market could go to infinity. And we've got, you know, basically a way to hedge against that. And if the market absolutely collapses, we use put options to help protect the downside, to help protect against that. So if you're sitting heavy in bonds, or maybe you're sitting heavy in cash, or if you're sitting heavy in stocks, you know, we think we've got a better way to do this. Again, you know, it's tim@innovativewealth.com is how you can get a hold of me personally, and then we can do an analysis and try to see if we can get you on a better path. And now if you are close to retirement or retired, you will not want to miss this information. Again, so without any further ado, we're going to start the podcast going back to the client video from October 2nd, 2018. Hope you guys enjoy. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is Tim Pichot, your financial planner. And, you know, apologize that I haven't been doing a lot of videos recently. You know, it did take, you know, quite a while trying to get the transition. But now that that is mainly done, a lot of the dust has settled. And, you know, it's great to finally, you know, be moving forward on a lot of different fun and exciting things. But getting back to fun and exciting, one of the things that's not as exciting is some of the stuff that's going on with the federal government as it relates to debt. So a lot of times, you know, I think of like, oh man, this would be great to share. This would be great to share. Or I should really do this presentation on this subject or that subject. And what usually ends up happening is, you know, I'm sort of a perfectionist. And so I usually end up not making anything. So what I'm doing right now is sort of, you know, flying off the cuff, see the pants over here, where, you know, there's some articles that, you know, sort of, you know, triggered me, and I went and, you know, just searched out some other stuff. So sort of, you know, it's kind of have like a hodgepodge of different, you know, thoughts that are going through my head right now and how it relates to managing your money. So some of you are probably thinking, you know, hey, Tim, you know, basically all I want to know is, you know, are you, you know, do you know what you're talking about? Are you managing my money? Am I going to be okay? And, you know, for the long, I guess the short answer for you guys is, yes, you are going to be okay. And we're really with the new strategy that we're running over here at Innovative Advisory Group, where, you know, if the market ends up crashing, then in many cases, you guys have put options, which would insulate you from a lot of the devastation that could occur to many of your friends and family who aren't in these types of strategies. And a lot of you also who are in retirement or close to retirement have different guaranteed income strategies as well. You know, whether it's annuities mixed with, you know, pensions mixed with Social Security. So we've already done the planning on that. And so if that's all you want to hear, I would tune off now, and that's really all you really need to know. But in terms of getting into, I guess, more of the details of really what I see going on, and again, I'm not looking at notes, not scripted, but do have some tabs open on the screen. The first tab, as you guys can see, is going to be the usdebtclock.org. You see that we just passed $21.5 trillion, which is obviously a pretty substantial amount of money. So I've actually not been on this site in a while. It looks like they switched a few things around. So they used to have like this unfunded liabilities per taxpayer, which I don't see on here anymore. But anyways, I mean, you get the gist of it that, you know, things are trending upwards in a bad sense of the word, because the debt is trending upwards. And if you take a look at the last 12 months, because we did just have the government's budget ends in the end of September. So, you know, it starts. So we just started the new fiscal year 2019 2 days ago. So today is October 2nd. This is a message for clients. So if you are seeing this as someone who isn't a client, you can email me personally at tim@innovativewealth.com. Or, you know, this was shared originally first to my clients because I want to make sure that they are getting the news first. But what we can see over here is CNSnews.com, and it looks like they have just reported yesterday that the debt increased $1.2 trillion over the last 12 months. So what is sort of important about this, I'm not sure where the official numbers are going to come out, because those are going to come out in a few days when the Congressional Budget Office or CBO announces their data. I think, you know, there is a chance that that the official estimate could even be over $1 trillion for the fiscal year, but it's probably definitely going to be over $1 trillion next year. It's something I've been talking about really since Trump got elected, that even if there was all this good news, it was going to eventually lead to higher interest rates, and it was going to, which would lead to, you know, more you know, obviously a strain on the government budget deficit eventually. But, you know, a lot of people sort of ignored that. And even though we did have tax cuts, you can't have increases and tax cuts. You know, it just doesn't work. I mean, and I think that this is going to be a picture that's going to probably come back to haunt the Republicans. Now, I'm not trying to make this a political podcast. I'm apolitical, that I dislike both parties. I see it, Liberty, used to be libertarian. So, you know, call out shots where I see it. But obviously, things that politicians do affect your money. So to the extent that things that politicians do positively or negatively affect your money, then that's the only part that we're going to talk about. So, you know, one reason why it's $1.2 trillion now, and you're wondering, well, hey, if the budget, if the debt increased by $1.2 trillion, then isn't that the budget deficit? Well, actually, you'd be surprised, because what they don't count is, they don't count things like, oh, you know, we, even though we have, you know, hurricanes most years and devastating hurricanes most years or natural disasters, they don't actually budget in natural disasters. So you, if you or I had, you know, we know we get, you know, our, you know, different maintenance on our car every year, and we can sort of plan that out in financial planning. But, you know, if every year, like, oh man, didn't know that was going to break, or didn't know that was going to break, but every year you've got something that breaks, you can sort of build that in, unless you're the government. Because then they're like, oh, well, you know, that was just a one-off, you know, $250 billion expense or $200 billion. I mean, I'm just making up numbers right now, but probably not too far off when you look at devastations like Katrina and, you know, whatever the toll from Florence may or may not be. But that's not, not, that's not counted. So, you know, the official one's probably going to be somewhere in the $900 billion range. I know last month alone, August, the government spent $200 billion just for August. And, you know, I'm sure once we create a space force, and that's going to do probably a whole hell of a lot of good. But, you know, where we're trying to go with all this stuff is eventually the interest is going to consume just about everything. I mean, eventually the interest rate is going to be $1 trillion in and of itself. And I'm trying to pull up, I was looking at a few different screens before I booted this up live, and sort of wish I maybe organized it a little bit better. But, you know, when it comes to the interest, it looks like right now we're you know, pushing $500 billion a year in interest. This was 2000. This was just part of the year of 2017, a part of 2018 year. So, I mean, it looks like we are, you know, really close to pushing the $500 billion mark. And you've got even guys like Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase, who I know recently came out and said just last month that he thinks the 10-year treasury could hit 5%. Well, if that's, that is, and so if the 10-year treasury is 5%, I mean, it means the government's borrowing pretty close to 5%. And so 5% of 20 trillion is a trillion. I mean, it doesn't, I mean, why nobody thinks this is a big deal, especially at the rate of these increases. I mean, last Obama deficit of technically is 2017, because this year 2018 will be technically be Trump's first budget deficit, but they left, his was I think it was $666 billion, so, you know, very fitting number we have there. But now we're double that, and so, you know, none of the Republicans care at all that we've just doubled the deficit. And so I've just been consistently, you know, I was complaining when the Democrats did it, I've complained when the Republicans did it. And if you don't need, you know, a bigger you know, I guess show and tell of, you know, how this whole thing's just a big charade, and, you know, when people are in power, they just want to keep more power. But it's, but it's, you know, all this, you know, smoke screens and noise and talking about how great things are. And what I'm going to provide in the next few tabs I'm going to pull up is sort of a counter argument to the narrative of how things are really going. But again, you know, since we're running the put option strategy, since some of you have some alternative investments, you know, a lot of you have annuities. So, you know, I'm not really worried too much for my clients. I'm just trying to provide the contrarian counter argument to a lot of what's going on right now. And one thing that's going on right now at a record pace is companies that are coming out with their initial public offerings, 83% of them are actually not even making money. And so, you know, people are buying these up. I mean, I think, you know, earlier you had, what's the cooking one? It was, I think Blue Apron, you know, they came out with one, they're not making any money. You had, I think SurveyMonkey the other day came out, they're not making any money. And this was stuff that was going on a lot, you know, back in the dot-com bubble. You saw this also in the cryptocurrency space, where they had ICOs, or initial coin offerings. And a lot of these were basically frauds, and I think to the detriment of the crypto industry, although there are some that I'm sure that are viable. But a lot of these, you know, weren't viable at all, and people were just pouring tons of money into them thinking that it was going to be the next Bitcoin. But don't mean this to be a crypto focused episode over here. But you know, one thing you'd also want to look at is, you know, hey, you know, if the, you know, what led to the 2000, I mean, a lot of things that led to the 2008 crisis, but one of the things that led to the crisis was a housing crash, if some of you remember. And also you had, you know, the autos, you know, were getting bailed out and they were in big, big trouble. It's just off the top of my head. I know that the subprime auto market right now is actually doing, I believe there's more delinquencies today than there was even in 2007, 2008. I don't have that pulled up right in front of me, but you know, if we take a look at the, and I'm not making any recommendations on these, I just wanted to pull out a general index. So I'm not, I just Googled, you know, different indexes for home construction. So I'm not making any, you know, buy recommendations on any of this. And obviously, you know, if you're watching this and you're my client, you'd go through me anyways in case this ends up making it, you know, makes the rounds. But, you know, right now we are down 18.88% year to date on the U.S. home construction ETF, the ITB. Again, not making a recommendation on this, but you've got the home construction index that's almost in bear market territory. And one of the, you've got a lot of, I think, contributing factors to this. I mean, one of the contributing factors is going to be the fact that with the new Trump tax cuts, you're now, and a lot of you are listening to this probably from New York. I've got other clients in high tax states as well, but now you're only allowed to deduct $10,000 off your property tax. Well, if you own a $1 million house, well, then that's going to be, you know, $35,000 a year. And now you can't actually, you know, deduct that from your taxes. Also now, you know, with the fact that you've got a lot of people now who are going to be using the standard deduction, because now that's the standard deduction is, you know, has been doubled, more people aren't going to be itemizing. So, you know, that's going to be also a drag to at least the higher end of the home market. And with interest rates going up, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest expenses you have in a house. So that's going to be a drag. Oh, and then it comes to the actual raw materials that, you know, a lot of that crap comes from China and other countries that we're going to slap, you know, a tariff on. And then I think in January or December, those tariffs are going to be getting jacked up potentially to 25%. And so all these different mitigating factors, again, not looking at notes. So there's just a few things off the top of my head. I did, you know, move to Arizona and bought a house within a month or two of the market low. And actually now we are renting. So hope, you know, I wouldn't say I'm hoping for a crash, but, you know, we've got some money on the sidelines and wouldn't mind buying back in right now, because I sort of want to see how all this shakes out. So now I'm going to go over to the global index fund for cars. Again, not making recommendations on this, but, you know, we are down, you know, close to a little over 12% right now. So that's over halfway to being in bear market territory already. No one really seems to talk about that. Another stock that I thought, this is, you know, right when I made the move to LPL initially, I thought that the stock that had the potential to be the next Lehman could be Deutsche Bank. And Deutsche Bank, you know, then it did actually go up a little bit. And now I'm trying to find, so Morningstar is not as easy to find the PE or some of the information as it is on some of the other websites, which I should have went to those websites first. But let me go to, I clicked on the wrong button. Let's go to trailing returns. I mean, I believe they're down, 40% year to date. I mean, last time I checked, I mean, they were even, you know, I think to start the year, they were even lower than they were in 2007. And so they've been borrowing money for next to nothing by the European Central Bank. Well, what's going to happen in December is the Europeans are now no longer going to be, you know, sort of, you know, they're not going to be doing their money printing scheme anymore, where they not only were buying their own sovereign bonds. So like the Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, Spain, all these basically bankrupt, broke countries who are actually getting, at some points, getting paid to borrow money. I'm sort of shocked that this whole charade's even able to go on for as long as it has, that you have negative interest rate bonds. And so what's going to happen when the person that was buying most of your bonds now all of a sudden is not going to be buying your bonds? I mean, you'd expect the rates to go up. So it's going to be harder for these governments to fund themselves. And ironically enough, if the U.S. government tried to apply to get into the EU, I mean, I'm just playing a hypothetical here, the debt as a percentage of GDP would be too high to even qualify entrance into into the Eurozone. I mean, to give you an idea how things are going right now. So Deutsche Bank, not in very good settings. And then when it comes to different PE ratios, I mean, one of the companies everyone's holding up is Amazon. They have a PE ratio of 156. So what that means in layman's terms is the higher the PE ratio, the more expensive a stock is. Traditionally, you're in like the 15, 16 range. I mean, granted, Amazon's more of a growth stock. So, I mean, we're adding, an extra digit here to the end. So it's not only is it 15 or 16, it's 156. And they actually don't even make very much money. And I should have probably tried to figure out exactly where it is in here. But if you go to their revenue numbers, and we want to see if it actually puts it into a graph. So you got revenue and then you got earnings. And you probably can't even see it on here, but the earnings are actually, it's that blue dot that you can barely see. I mean, they're barely making any money at all. So let's see. I mean, they earned, $3 billion last year. But I mean, the amount that you're paying for these stocks are absolutely incredible. Same thing going on with Netflix right now. I mean, I'm just using these two because they're two of the more prevalent examples that you see out there. And so we've got Netflix coming in here at a 171 PE. Again, very high rate. And a lot of these companies have been predicated on, borrowing money at next to nothing and then being able to roll that over. Well, as interest rates have been, steadily creeping up over here, that's going to be a big drag on their earnings. And so another metric to value different stocks is going to be the Shiller PE ratio. In, layman's terms, what this is, again, the higher the number, the more overvalued the stock market is, but it smooths out the PE ratio over a 10-year time period. And basically what the Nobel Prize-winning research relates to is that when you're in the top quintile of being, the most expensive, which is, right where we've been the past, year or two, that the forward 10-year returns going forward are very, very low. It's like, 3, 4, 5%, incredibly low. Whereas when it's in the other quintiles, it's very high, which usually sometimes, is going to relate to the fact that you might be in for a rude awakening. Again, it's not a perfect science. Otherwise, we would have, bet, 3 years ago that everything was going to absolutely crash and it didn't. You've had a lot of unprecedented money printing going on. And as soon as the Fed decided that they would stop printing money in late 2014, the Bank of Japan massively increased their program. A few months later, the Europeans then started theirs out of the blue. Other banks like the Swiss have just, used keyboards. Let's make a keyboard sound right there. To just buy up, print money out of thin air and buy up stocks out of the blue. So it's really taken a lot of the fundamental analysis and valuation completely out of the game. Again, we've got a high number here as it relates to the cap. What am I looking at over here? Budget deficits. We already talked about the budget deficits. What are we looking at over here? Yeah, we're about to fork out close to $500 billion when it comes to the interest. I already talked about that. Another one that's interesting is if you look at the corporate profits. So the earnings of companies per share have been going up because what companies have been doing, particularly with the Trump tax break that went on, is they've just been using all this extra cash to then buy back their own stock. So now they have less stock outstanding, which has actually increased the earnings per share, and they haven't necessarily increased their revenue. But there's only such a limit to the amount of financial accounting trickery that can be necessarily going on. George W. Bush did the same thing. Can't remember the year. I think it was 2004 or 5. And then look where it ended up. At the end of his term, it was negative for the entire 8-year period. But long story short, we have the actual corporate profits not even up over 5% over the past 6 years, while the stock market's up 82%. So it seems like there is a very big disconnect that is going on. And since so many people have, and here's an article from earlier in the year, actually July 2nd, and I believe the number now is closer to $800 billion. Yeah, showed a $433 billion repurchases just in the first quarter alone, which was a record. So you've got a lot of big-time companies that are just using this newfound money instead of investing in new plants, instead of doing different things to increase future business down the road. They're doing things to increase the stock price. The time to buy your stock back is when it's at a low, not when it's at an all-time high. But that's what the companies, you have the CEOs who oftentimes are incentivized to make either short-term decisions, or board members, or all these people who, hey, I'm getting paid $30 million, and
you know, if I want to get paid $100 million and I need, you know, this number to be a little bit higher, and the best, the easiest way to, you know, kind of inject those, you know, steroids into the system is buy back our own stock. And so the boards and are really incentivized to do this. And again, I am a, you know, free market capitalist over here. So I'm not, you know, saying we need any socialism or anything like that. So I don't want to, you know, have my comments misconstrued. And what do we got going here with this article? I think this is the one that I initially read that I know actually it wasn't this. I'm going to pause this and try to find the article that I was initially looking at for you guys. All right, so managed to find it. It was an article entitled "The World's Greatest Investors Are Sounding the Alarm. It's Time to Be Cautious." And basically it goes on to say Howard Marks, who he was a, I guess, the founder of Oak Tree Capital Management, to which Warren Buffett once replied to that he stops everything he's doing when Marks releases a new memo. And Buffett says, "It's the first thing I open and read." But in his newest memo, which was the title I just read, he goes on and says, and those seven words are, "Too much money chasing too few deals." And so I think that's absolutely the case going on right now. You know, it goes on to say that you've got two stocks, Apple and Amazon, responsible for 30% of the S&P 500's gains so far. It also goes on to say, you know, famed economist of the Interest Rate Observer, Jim Grant, said that today we have boom-era stock prices coupled with depression-era interest rates, two things that are completely incongruent with one another. And then you've got other guys like Ray Dalio, who's talking about, you know, some sort of, you know, correction in that by 2020. Okay, here it is down there. He's the founder of the largest hedge fund in the world, Bridgewater. You've got Ken Griffin of Citadel. He thinks we're 18 to 24 months away. And bottom line is, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, if we're 18 months away, if we're 1 year away, if we're 8 minutes away. I guess we can't be 8 minutes away because the market's closed right now. But yeah, it is 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time right now as we're filming this. But, you know, we definitely have too few assets chasing or too few, I guess, too much money chasing too few assets, which leads to a lot of malinvestment, bad investments. And I think that right now it's a time to be safe. But, you know, again, with our strategy, you know, if the market decides to go up another 50% from here, then, you know, we should benefit from that. If the market goes down another 50% from there, then we get to buy back everything cheaper. Hopefully, you know, we're not going to lose nearly as much as everybody else. You know, I can't, you know, guarantee anything, but, you know, I think that I am sleeping, you know, nice and sound these days, and no problems, anything like that. So, you know, I do think that this is an interesting time. I think you guys are, you know, I'm very grateful you've chosen me as your advisor. And I think you guys are going to be lucky in the long run when eventually some of this these things sort its way out. I think we are right now. And I know we are as of about 3 weeks ago in the longest S&P 500 run ever without a 20% correction. Now, technically, and again, there's fake news everywhere on this. Technically, I think in 1990, the market went down 19.97% and not 20%. And so if you, but Wall Street and everybody sort of just rounds it up to 20. But if you don't round that up, you have to go back to October of 87, which technically means you've got another 1,000 days to beat the actual record. So, I mean, you can never trust any of these guys with any of the news that comes out, because, you know, there's even, you know, fake news regarding that as well. But, you know, whether we're in the longest or we're really, you know, 1,000 days away from being the longest, I think it's all immaterial. And yeah, and that, so I just wanted to provide the counter argument, because I know a lot of people have been saying, hey, you know, Tim, you've been talking about some of this stuff for a while and it just seems you're wrong. Well, you know, I will admit that, you know, that definitely the timing on this, I'd never prognosticated that I knew exactly when it was going to happen. And sort of think that now, because of Trump getting elected, that people, you know, I think we sort of moved from the eighth, ninth inning into extra innings, and the optimism that's been going on. As a matter of fact, I think I just saw an article while I was trying to find this one that, and I don't know why it just took me off of there, that actually showed that past year you had Republicans who, you know, were very, very heavy into stocks, where a lot of Democrats are buying more bonds. So, I mean, it shows that one group of people are very optimistic. The other group of people aren't as optimistic of things going on. So, yeah, here, I just read the headline. So not really sure how that's going to go. Another headline, September U.S. auto sales plunged. Again, there's a lot of, you know, I guess, you know, sensational headlines sometimes, because, you know, that's what people want you to think about. But no, it's, you know, definitely a time, you know, when everyone is optimistic. And that's really, I guess, what was missing from my thesis, is everybody was so pessimistic when Obama was in there, that you can't have a crash when everyone's already pessimistic. you can only have a crash when people are super optimistic. And usually you see the greatest spikes of optimism right before a crash. You see the greatest spikes in consumer confidence, you know, right before things end up getting bad. And usually the best time to invest is when people are the most pessimistic. I mean, go back to, you know, March 2009, you know, go back to even when I bought my house in 2000. And when did I buy my house? 2012, you know, trying to convince people to go buy a house in 2012, you know, lucky you don't get, you know, shot in the face trying to do that, or trying to convince people to go into the stock market in March 2009. Same deal. They're trying to convince people that, you know, blockchain is here to stay after a lot of those assets have gone down 80%, you know, with the caveat that they went up, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of percent before that drop. And, you know, and it is, and this does, you know, really sort of bother me a little bit that I was really trying to make sure that my clients were in the best position possible to profit from whatever could go on in the crypto market. But I really thought we were like 2 to 5 years away from a big explosion. So last August, when I started working on all this stuff, when Bitcoin was like $2,000, there was no real method for my clients to be able to get into it. And they weren't allowed to buy one of the methods to be able to get into it when I was over at LPL. And so I was trying to figure out another way to do that. And then out of nowhere, it just goes from like 2,000 to 20,000 and sort of, you know, so I know I definitely lost, you know, a few clients who said, hey, you know, you're talking about Bitcoin and it absolutely crashed. Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, I the first client I told about it was at 200 and the first prospect I told about it was at $30. So, you know, I did get in some myself, which, you know, has helped me survive a little bit over here right now. But, you know, because, you know, it's been you know, a little bit of a challenging year, but I'm super excited about how things are going forward. But I think it's a very similar story of, you know, you always want to buy when no one else wants to buy, because that's the time to buy. I mean, the time to buy is not when everybody else wants to jump into something. That's usually the signs of a classic bubble. And I think that right now what is going on, you see lots of classic signs of bubbles going on. And particularly, I think the biggest headwind you have going on is you've got, you know, let's say the Treasury, they're going to have to, I mean, even if we just continue the same $1.2 trillion, it will probably go up. If we continue the $1.2 trillion of deficit, it means that the Treasury needs to issue $1.2 trillion of bonds next year. At the same time, the Federal Reserve, starting this month, is selling $50 billion a month. So, okay, there's another $600 billion right there. So now we're at $1.8 billion that of new Treasury bills that need to be issued. And then I think you've got over $1 trillion of other bonds that are just maturing that then need to be rolled over, and they're gonna be rolled over at higher rates. So maybe they initially got in there at like, you know, the government was maybe paying 1%, and now they got to maybe pay like 3 or 4. And so it's all negative headwinds. And then who were the ones who were buying our bonds? Traditionally, it was the Fed. Well, now they're the largest seller. And then then the Japanese and Chinese are always neck and neck. And some people are really surprised to find out that oftentimes the Chinese actually even own more bonds than the Japanese oftentimes own more bonds than the Chinese. But again, they're neck and neck. And we're in a trade war with China, and Japan's one of the most indebted, I think they are the most indebted first world country in the world. So we're relying on, you know, it's like MC Hammer, you know, financing, you know, like, financing you when he's absolutely broke. You know, again, it's a bad example, but it's just absolutely crazy, you know, what's going on. And I think you've got the perfect storm. That's one perfect storm. You've also got the perfect storm of now the ECB, European Central Bank, is going to stop investing in their and buying bonds over there. And so I see all these things really coming to a head, and I see the powers, you know, the power structure elite out there, they're not going to want to help Trump out. They're not going to want to, you know, do different things or admit that, you know, that the Federal Reserve, you know, really is at fault for a lot of what's going on. And you know, not to make this political, but, you know, one of the things I did like about Trump early on when he was a candidate is that he called out, you know, the Fed keeping rates low and trying to help Hillary out. And, you know, we need to have higher interest rates, even though he's a low interest rate guy. But then he gets in there and he's like, what are you doing raising the interest rates? And so I think he's being, you know, a hypocrite on that front, because, you know, if he wants to make America great again, you need to end the Federal Reserve. But ultimately, they're going to end themselves. This is the third one we've had as a country. You know, we had one, that ended in 1812, and the British openly owned it, and they came here and burned down the White House as a result. Andrew Jackson got rid of the second one, and he said, "You are a den of vipers, and my eternal God, I shall rout you out." And then in 1913, they snuck in another one 2 days before Christmas. And I think really it's sort of, they sort of jumped the shark, I think, over the past 8-10 years, where, you know, we had to issue so much debt that really we sort of are going to reach a tipping point. And, you know, I don't know how we're going to pay $1 trillion a year in interest. I don't know how we're going to pay 500. And I certainly don't know how nobody seems to care. But, you know, your advisor cares. He wants to make sure that you guys are okay. And I don't mean to scare anybody. I mean, I'm just sort of the messenger on this. But I ultimately think that we're going to profit from this, you know, if you guys trust me, and you guys have trusted me. And, you know, it's not something that I take lightly. So I am on top of this. And if you guys are still watching at this point, you know, definitely appreciate it. And feel free to, you know, share this with some of your friends. Feel free to share it with, you know, other family members, because ultimately you want to be able to have them be in a position to not, you know, sort of go down with the ship as well. You know, there's a lot of different, you know, factors that go into retirement. You've got, you know, how long you live is actually the most important factor, because the longer you live, the more other stuff that can go wrong. It's sort of like a multiplication factor in there. So, you know, then you've got sequence of return risk, where it's the order of the stock market returns are actually more important than the average of the returns, which means in Lehman's terms, that was a Freudian slip over there. You know, if the market goes down 40% year one and you average 10%, well, it doesn't matter if you go down 40% year one, it doesn't matter if you average 10, if you're down huge the first year. So we've got factors that mitigate that. You've got inflation risk, deflation risk, withdrawal rate risk, taking too much money out of your account. And then you've got a lot of demographic problems. And then don't even get me started on the government pension funds that are about 35% underfunded. So you've got all these different scenarios that are really coming to a head. Oh, and didn't mention interest rate risk. Again, not doing this with any notes. So the interest rate risk, you know, as the interest rates go up, the underlying values of the bonds go down. And when you've got the Federal Reserve sitting on, you know, $4.4 trillion of bonds, and they barely, you know, have sold anything, and you've seen the rates, you know, spike up quite a bit, relatively speaking, you know, it's like someone who's 600 pounds loses 5 pounds and says, "Oh my God, if I lose another, you know, pound over here, I'm going to die." And that's pretty much what the Fed has done, where, you know, and I should just go to this right, you know, right now, but I mean, you guys get the point. I mean, basically the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, you know, spiked up a ton, and then, you know, has flatlined and gone down like the tiniest bit. I mean, you have to like zoom in on it just to even see where the dip occurred. And that's caused a 10-year to go from somewhere around, you know, like, you know, I think it was like 1.2 or 3 at one point, maybe 1.4 all the way up to now. You know, it's probably close to 3. I know at one point last week it was over 3, and certainly heading higher. And what I'm more scared about is not the, I won't say scared, but more for the average person out there, I am scared about that. But, you know, eventually when, you know, if you've got $1 million in bonds and rates go up 1%, you're in a 10-year duration bond, then now you've got $900,000, and you better hope you can live off that, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year in interest you're getting, and don't have to dip into principal. Otherwise, you're going to have to sell at a major loss. And if you're a big pension fund, that's going on. That didn't really happen in 2008 because the baby boomers were just turning 62. Well, now we're 10 years later. Now they're turning 72. That's a big headwind. They don't have 10 years of a recovery to wait things out next time. And so all these different factors are completely being ignored by CNBC, completely being ignored by the mainstream media, and everybody just wants to, nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news. And I don't like, I wish I could just, you know, let go of my conscience, let go of my, you know, morality, let go of, you know, everything, you know, sort of makes me and just say, "Oh yeah, you know, you should definitely just keep buying, and definitely, you know, everything's going great." And then if you lose money, well, hey, so did everybody else, and how could I have predicted that? But, you know, this is very predictable that eventually this will result in some sort of crisis. But ultimately, I think that crisis will lead to probably the market going up even higher, because we're going to start printing money again. But you've got to have but there could be an interim period, and we've got to have a plan for that interim period. So luckily, you're working with a guy that knows what he's talking about, or a person. I mean, I'm not, you know, saying that you only have to work with guys, but, you know, you're working with a person over here who knows what they're doing, very, you know, sort of addicted to this stuff, as I'm sure many of you who've known me for a long time, you know, it doesn't really come as a surprise to you. But thank you for watching. If you have any questions, what I want to start doing is actually weekly webinars where you guys can, you know, call in and, or maybe write some questions in advance and, you know, pick my brain on some certain things. But, you know, now that the dust is sort of settling over here, and I, you know, really appreciate everyone who's been able to, you know, stick with me throughout this entire endeavor. It really means a lot to me and my family. The last thing I wanted to do was to be, you know, leave LPL, because things were going really well for me over there. But, you know, I took, you know, sort of took a bullet, because what I wanted to do was I wanted to be, have my clients be in a position to be able to benefit from what I think is coming in the blockchain space. And it's not dead right now. It's, I believe it is going to bounce back. There is a lot of crap in the system. You know, a lot of stuff that, you know, there's over 2000 cryptocurrencies, probably 1990 of them you probably shouldn't touch. And it's not to say just go out and buy the top 10. I mean, use myself as a resource if you're interested. I'm not going to push it on anybody, but this is here to stay. There's a lot of big time people in it. Again, I'm not gonna make a crypto show out of this, but I'll probably do that later on at some point here shortly, or maybe make a webinar out of it. But anyways, thank you for watching. For many of you in New York, I hopefully will see you next week, or if you're watching it this week, depending on when you're watching this. But thanks for watching. If you have questions about it, let me know. If you've got different, I guess, pointers. Again, I am winging this and just want to see, you know, how you guys like this. But, you know, probably sick of me talking about now, and I'll talk to you guys later. Take care.